We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft. But Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink. Which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Bite.
All right, it's almost game week. We are back at McAllister's Deli here on McGalliard. It's Monday night with the red and white, brought to us by McAllister's Deli, as we break down all things Ball State football. The Cardinals getting set for their season opener coming up on November 4th. They'll travel to take on the reigning Mid-American Conference champions, although not the reigning champions of the Redbird rivalry. Cardinals will face the Miami Redhawks for the second time in as many Cardinals games coming up just... My math is bad. 9 days from now? 9 days? At this point, 9 days. Yeah, that sounds about right. About a week and a half from today. In his first Ball State game next Wednesday night will be the new defensive pass game coordinator for the Cardinals. He is our first guest off the top of the show. Brandon Martin, senior linebacker, will be with us on the back end of the show. We'll talk about all things Ball State defense, Peyton Manning, David Letterman. That was random. Very cool. We'll get into that with B-Mar on the back half of the program. But first, Josh Zeidenberg joins us, and welcome, sir. Are you excited for, I don't know if this is how you envisioned it being your first Ball State football game, but you excited to get one under your belt?
Very much so. I mean, yeah, definitely didn't predict it to be this type of situation, but excited nonetheless and ready to get rolling.
This is your fifth school in 5 years, right?
It is. It is. Your math is correct on that.
What's it like bouncing upwards in the coaching ranks, five schools in 5 years?
I mean, it's been great for me. Now, if you ask my wife, you might get a different answer. But, you know, in all seriousness, she's been a trooper with it, too. And you know, new experiences, new people, you know, every move can look back and feel like it was the right move at the right time, in the right situation. And this one, same as. And it's been great since I've been here and excited to be here and back united with Coach Stockton, you know, very close friend of mine. And then be able to build the relationships with the players and the new staff here. It's all gone really, really well.
Yeah, we talked about it last week with Pat Doherty in terms of how you build your way up in the coaching world and different paths and different strokes for different folks. And Pat had a master's degree and he had a job and he was like, you know what, I'm going to go take a GA job at Ball State because that's the right thing for me. Five jobs in 5 years is never easy, but that's the thing people talk about when coaches are on hot seats and you get fans like, ah, get rid of them. It's like, well, hang on a second. Like, these are people. Right. There are lives like associated with all of this. What is it like, obviously all for the right end game, but to go from school to school to school to until this is your first full-time assistant job at the FBS level, to get to that level that you want to be at. How hard, how difficult is that for you?
To me, it's just it's more of an exciting thing. It's an opportunity to further validate and prove yourself, and then more than anything, to me, it's just another group of players. I mean, to me, that they've always come first and foremost with the reason and the why behind why I'm even in the profession. Because maybe a little bit similar. I had actually left G8 for a little bit, got my master's, did mortgages for a few years, and was doing fine there. Was with an unbelievable company that was treating me great, and just got married, and was doing pretty well financially, and basically went to my wife and said, "Hey,
I'm gonna take this whole thing. Yeah.
I think I'm gonna go back in GA if you're down with it, and we're gonna go up to Connecticut as well, if that's okay." And
where were you at the time?
We were in Southeast Virginia, so Norfolk, Virginia.
Different deal, yeah.
Yeah, and that's where all her family is, and everyone basically still lives there. And so when we moved up there, it was basically the first person in her family to leave the area. And so she was like, "I know you're not happy, and I think this is your calling, and let's go." And so then from there, I don't know that she knew it was going to be, 5 and 5 years, but like I said, she's been unbelievable throughout it.
How long did you do mortgages?
So I did mortgages for 3 years. Yep. And carried my license for a couple just with some continuing ed, but it's been long gone. I'm way out of the game now.
What were the voices in your head like when you're sitting there figuring out what somebody's going to pay on their house, going, "Yeah, I wish this was X's and O's."
Well, the shame of it is that they actually let me do that, just considering that I'm terrible with with math and all that stuff. I was an English major at Virginia, so not that my English is that much better, but it was just one of those things. I actually helped out and coached a youth Pop Warner team when I was down there, and it was just kind of the itch, and I'd watch it. When I met my wife, would watch every Saturday and I think she started to see he's really involved in it. And she knew, obviously as we got to know each other, my background and my history and all that stuff. But, I think she really saw it was different when I was involved in watching that type of stuff. And so it was just always something that when I left too, I knew, okay, hey, listen, I've only ever done football my entire life. So let me just see and try something different. If I love it, then great. And if not, I'll know, hey, football is what I want to do, and even though I may be married and 28 at the time when it ended up coming back, if I want to get back into it, I'm probably going to have to GA again, but I'll be willing to do it if I know that's what I want to do.
How hard is that? I feel like this is now going into real talk, like deep conversations. How difficult is that at 28 years old to be like, "All right, I got a job, I got a wife, I got a life, things are good. I'm going to start all over. I'm going to make no money. Mm. We'll figure out how to eat. We're going to move to a new place." How difficult is that to do? Not to get all preachy, but if there's somebody in their car driving who's like, "Man, I want to go do this," to pursue a passion. How hard is that trigger to pull?
Well, I guess the real question you have to ask yourself is, and be really honest with yourself, which sometimes can be tough, but is it truly a passion and something that you love and that you really want to do, or is you in love with the idea of it and mm-hmm. what you see maybe from the surface when you're watching TV and you see the new news conferences or you see a contract scroll across the screen? You're like, "Oh my gosh, I can't believe that's the case," because that's a select few that have that.
How'd you know you weren't in love with the idea of being a coach?
Probably just because football was the only thing in my life, ever growing up. It was the only thing that really kept me in that on the straight and narrow, and or as much as possible at least, and academically wanted to do right. I always had in my head, whatever I got to do to make sure football isn't taken away from me, that's what I'll do. And I probably loved it more than it really ever made sense to love, what people call a quote unquote sport. To your question, maybe it's not a good thing, but it wasn't difficult for me at all. It was, yeah, let's go. Let's do it. It's really just more about is Lindsay, my wife, on board. And like I said, she without hesitation said, "Let's go," and has rocked and rolled. So that obviously made it significantly easier. Who knows if her response would have been like, whoa, hold on now. We just got married. You're going to go from what to what, financially. And so, that support system obviously is critical, and any coaches that are married would second that notion. But with if it's something you truly love and want to do it, there's no sacrifice too great, in my opinion.
Josh Zeidenberg joins us. He's Ball State's defensive pass game coordinator, defensive backs coach. You played at Virginia from when to when?
So I played from 04, so I ended up playing as a true freshman walk-on, actually, and then obviously got the scholarship right after that, so and then finished in 07. So graduated in 08. So 04, 05, 06, 07.
You GA'd at Virginia as well.
Correct. So I spent a season with the Miami Dolphins in 08, right when I finished playing, and I was working with them, and then got back into it in 09, back with the coach who I played for, Al Groh. Unfortunately, the first year there, we all got let go, and I was unfortunate, but then fortunate that they hired a guy named Mike London, who I'm just now leaving.
I was going to say, he was at William & Mary with you. Yeah.
And he was who basically recruited me to Virginia as a player. And he's from the same Hampton Roads area. I was fortunate that he, you know, was hired and was able to stay on and finish my GA ship. And then that's when kind of I was actually going to do some strength conditioning. They hired a strength coach who I'm really close with, who was my strength coach. His name's Evan Marcus. He's actually, I think, with the Cleveland Browns now. And it was one of those deals where it was just a time where I needed to branch out and try something new. So got connected with the mortgages. The owner of the company who started up was a UVA alum and former player, and it was an opportunity to do something different.
Where were you in 2013?
So 13, I was still doing mortgages.
Okay, yep. So you were out of Virginia at that point.
Yep.
No, okay.
So I was not a part of that.
I was hoping that's what I was like trying to navigate myself to.
I know.
What do you
I'm
think
old.
When you walk by the plaque in the hallway that says Ball State routed Virginia in 2013 every day?
Well, I mean, at least I guess the good news is that I wasn't there or a part of it, and so it's not as tough. But I mean, I'm here now, so if we played Virginia. We played Virginia last year when I was at William & Mary, and I would have loved nothing better than to win and win handedly. If we played them again, it would be the same way. So,
I was gonna say, what is it like going back to the grounds and a place you've played? And
I mean, it was definitely unique. You know, that was the first time actually, and I've been at some schools in the state that you know, had coaching spots, but just never had played there or been back there, and so that was the first time. And you know, being on the other sideline, being in the visitors' locker room, I mean, it definitely was a different experience. You know, being on the other side of what it was like in Scott Stadium in terms of the cheers and the jeers and all that stuff. So, but it was, you know, at the end of the day, you put the headset on, you're wearing the colors you're wearing, you're coaching the players you're coaching, and you're trying to win a ball game.
Josh Zeidenberg's Ball State's defensive backs coach, defensive pass game coordinator as well. Coaching is a weird business because you always look at what people coach and how they get there and like things that just don't make sense. Like you would think like, all right, well, Peyton Manning is a quarterback's coach. And like, if he coached, he probably would be, but like, it would be odd if you were like Indianapolis Colts defensive line coach, Peyton Manning.
Right.
But Josh Zeidenberg, running back at Virginia, how did you get into coaching safeties and corners?
So it was one of those deals where, and actually coming out of high school, I was, you know, recruited to play safety. Virginia wanted me to come in and try out safety, and I was just, you know, one, thinking I'm better than I am, but two, just like every high school kid does, everybody wants the ball in their hand, everyone wants to score touchdowns. I was just thought I was a much better running back, and kind of one of the things that sealed the deal, you know, ultimately on my last day on my official visit, Coach Groh had said, all right, hey, we'll give you a shot to come in and play running back. But I have the right to move you. And, you know, the first 2 weeks I was there and we did some, they used to call them the weenie bowls, but it was basically the rookie and the developmental type of live scrimmages at the end of the two-a-day fall camps and had a couple good runs and stayed. And so special teams always was a big, ended up being a big niche for me, and I returned kicks my senior year and, you know, an all four-phase guy and all that stuff. And so it was one of those deals where, you know, when I came back, Coach Groh just put me on defense, and that was, I don't, you know, whether it was because that's where the opening was or, you know, that was always part of his plan. You know, I think it actually gave me a little bit of an advantage in terms of just coming in new and trying to learn just kind of how this whole thing works. I had a good understanding of offense because we ran an NFL West Coast offense when I was a player there. So I think it if anything, it probably just helped in terms of breakdowns and stuff. And then it was just a matter of just learning it from a different lens in terms of flipping it. And then I just
he'd already been with the Jets, right?
Yeah. So he came from the year as a head coach after that is when he got hired at Virginia. So, you know, just seeing it from a different lens. And then it was just kind of, I got you know, indoctrinated into defense and have grown to just love it way more than ever offensively. And probably some of it, you know, people used to joke, my mentality was probably a little bit more defensive than offensive, even as a player. So I think that probably helped as well.
How hard is it to learn something new? I'm sure there's a comfort level with knowing, like, hey, I can teach this because I did it at a higher level. How much do you have to learn? Like, what are you trying to figure out on the fly to teach a position like that?
I mean, I think it's you know, a lot of times if you're a football guy, if it's something that you care about and means a lot and you're really passionate about it, the learning it and wanting to be good and wanting to put the work in to be able to kind of master, whether it's your position or whatever it is really the fun part. You know what I mean? Is seeing it from a different, you know, perspective and different spectrum is part of what the challenge was. And I kind of embraced and just dove in and was just trying to be like a sponge and soak it up. And then a lot of times with a lot of the stuff I did too, is I've been with special teams, you know, consistently. You know, that's always been kind of, you know, one of those things that's been tagged to me at all the different spots and stuff too, which is, you know, has only been a good thing. And so it helps too from a defense, just because a lot of them are running hit type of stuff. So, you know, I think the carryover wasn't as difficult as maybe sometimes it may be for guys.
Have you gone to Pat Doherty at all and been like, listen, I know you got a lot on your plate, man. If you want to, like, I can do the special teams. Like, that's my jam. I got you.
I'd be lying if I said yes, I have done that. But actually the funny thing is Pat and I and a couple of the coaches were downstairs, you know, earlier today and looking through some of the special team stuff and going through stuff. So it's still something that really with special teams, you know, as much as the special teams coordinator has kind of looked as the guy, it's really all hands on deck, you know, and it really needs to be that way, because if the buy-in isn't there from every coach, it really makes it tough for that unit to be successful. And it's having and knowing what it's like to be the ST coordinator, and when, you know, stuff goes good, that's great, but that's also kind of what's supposed to happen when stuff goes wrong. It's like, what are you doing? And you're like, okay, well, this isn't that much fun anymore.
And nobody notices when things go well on
right,
special teams.
Exactly.
They only notice when things go horribly wrong.
Exactly, exactly. Well, yeah, that's what he's supposed to do. I mean, what's the big deal?
Why he's supposed to make it from 55 yards.
Right, exactly. So I certainly understand that life and that feeling. So, you know, wanted to just make sure that the buy-in is there, because I think, too, the more the players see the buy-in from every level and all the coaches, you know, that's what really can elevate, you know, those units for your team.
Josh Seidenberg joins us, Ball State's defensive pass game coordinator, formerly a special teams coordinator at several stops previously in his career. You're here because of Tyler Stockton.
Exactly. Right?
Yep. Defensive coordinator for the Cardinals in his first year. Opening on the staff, he goes to you. You guys coached together at Western Illinois, and then before that, were you GAs together at UConn?
At UConn, correct.
Was that the first time you'd ever come across each other?
Yes.
So what clicked? You guys are in Storrs, Connecticut, as early 20s, late 20s, young football coaches. Take me back to, you know, mid-2000s of how you two bonded and what relationship got formed there.
Well, you know, part of it is obviously as GAs, you know, the unique thing about it, UConn was, you know, you tend to migrate and every one of us, even the offensive GAs, we were all got really, really close, because you spend so much time around each other.
Yeah, but you were married at that point, right?
I was.
And they're like all living together and you're the guy over here.
So Tyler, I'm pretty sure, if I remember correctly, lived by himself. One of the other GAs was also married and actually just had a young daughter born. And then I think one of the other ones was living by himself too. So it was a little bit different.
Very antisocial crew. Yeah,
yeah, exactly. But, but we spend so much time at the facilities together.
Yeah.
And, you know, it was one of those things where when I got there, you know, and I knew Coach Diaco, who was the head coach. He was actually the special teams at Virginia, and then the DC that he hired, a guy named Anthony Poindexter, who's now the co-DC at Purdue. He was kind of my tie to getting there. He got hired as the DC and brought me with them. And so there was a lot of coaches that I'd already known. And so I always would joke with Tyler though, and still do is so T-Stock understandably was finishing up his MBA like he should have from Notre Dame. And he was just coming off playing. And so the whole spring, it was just me by myself. So it was just like all of the workload of the GA. And so he came in the summertime and like you know, I'd already revamped the playbook and already started all this stuff. And so, you know, we were just hitting the ground running. But the best part about Stock is, and obviously you've met him, and if anyone's met him, you know, he's just one of those guys that it's hard to explain, but everyone just loves T-Stock. So he's got that personality. It's infectious. And, you know, it's one of those deals where he was just so willing and eager to just do whatever he could. Jump in and help, and then of course we just, you know, we're in the same office and we're sharing the same everything together, and you just kind of get really, really, really close. And so it was one of those that just kind of withstood, you know, right after I left, and we just always stayed in constant contact, and you know, here we are, what is it, 6 years later, and you know, been together a couple of times since.
Was it happenstance you wound up at Western Illinois at the same time?
No, it was, that was 100% because of him as well.
Oh wow, okay.
Yep. So he's from that standpoint, it's definitely been nice because, you know, to his credit, you know, there's a lot of times where it's like, hey, if I ever start doing this, you know, I'm going to always try to have you with me. You know, sometimes it's just saying, and at least for myself and T-Stock, he's 100% been on board with that.
Why do you guys philosophically jive? Like, what clicks defensively between the two of your minds?
I think a big part of it is just the trees that we've kind of come from. It's the same one. It's a similar one. You know, Coach Diaco was his defensive coordinator as a player, and he kind of came from Al Groh as an assistant there, and that's who I played for. And so there was just this natural tie.
So there's some family ties that,
right,
you didn't know each other, but you knew each other.
Right. So defensively, you know, when he had gotten to UConn and it, you know, when I first got to you, because I wasn't sure what Coach Diaco and defensively what he was using terminology wise, and then when I saw the playbook, I was like, oh, I know what this is. I know what this is. I know what this is. And so when then Tyler came and we were talking through it, it was just one of those where we already had a good conceptual base and then started just piecing together stuff from different spots that I had been, you know, and different things that he had learned when he, you know, got to Western as a full-time and different DCs coming through there and kind of just melded and put different pieces together and, you know, just very cohesive and you know, it's been a really, really, really great relationship.
Where's Diaco now?
He is at Purdue as well.
Oh, is he?
Yep. So he's the DC now, and Anthony Poindexter is the co-DC, and so they're back united as well.
Have you guys gone down to Purdue at all? And
so I went in
brains.
I went and saw. Well, so the tough thing was with COVID, we were planning on going
anything,
to watch
yeah.
it. Yeah, we were planning on going to watch a spring practice, and then everything kind of hit. I went and visited because Anthony Poindexter's youngest daughter's mine and my wife's goddaughter, and actually
oh, wow, okay.
my wife and my son's name is Dexter after him and his family. And so we went and visited Memorial Day weekend and actually went over to the Diacos as well, and so I was actually able to see him and hang out. But in terms of X's and O's, we've definitely wanted to and had plans for it, and then, you know, the pandemic hit. So
just as long as they're not on the schedule.
Right.
But if you want to put them on the schedule, like, by all means.
Let's go.
Not stopping anybody.
Right.
Josh Zeidenberg joins us. He's Ball State's defensive pass game coordinator, secondary coach. We'll take a timeout, come on back, talk about some of his personnel heading into next week's opener. Ball State takes on the Miami Redhawks Wednesday night, 7 o'clock kick, 6 o'clock countdown to kickoff. I almost called it Mutual Bank Countdown to Kickoff. That's not what it's called anymore. Countdown to Kickoff next week at 6 o'clock over on our sister station, 104.1 WLBC. Take a timeout. We're back with Josh Zeidenberg at McAllister's Deli on McGalliard next. This is Monday Night with the Red and White from Learfield, IMG College. Monday Night with the Red and White, back at it here at McAllister's Deli on McGalliard. Come on by McAllister's. Sweet tea, double-baked potatoes, always the way to go. Chris Adjman was here a couple of weeks ago. We ordered a baked potato, and I was like, you know, that's like the size of a human head.
Right.
That's giant. So
now the definition of sweet tea has got to be a little bit. I mean, is it real sweet tea or is it semi sweet?
It's sweet. I mean, like you've probably got a taste for.
Yeah, basically sugar water.
It's borderline here.
There you go.
Yeah, it's well done.
That's the way it's supposed to be done.
So sweet tea and spuds, technically, if you come on to McAllister's Deli. Josh Zeidenberg continues to join us. He's Ball State's defensive pass game coordinator. We've talked about it on video before. I've talked with them about it. We've not talked about it in this setting, though. So they tell me that you have the two best cornerbacks in the country. At least tell me why they're the two best in the conference.
having not really seen the whole conference and just going off kind of what
why
what
are they good?
Seat,
yeah,
they're. I think a big part of why they're good is one, just their ability and want to be coached and be better and get better, even though they've achieved, you know, already individually some really good things. You know, that desire to come in and work every single day and improve their game and the thirst for knowledge to try to get better. I think that's something that sets them a little bit apart for sure. And then obviously they've got the length you want and the movement skills and all the athletic ability aspects that, you know, certainly help and play a large role as well.
What took you back about what you saw on film? Like the first time you popped those guys in, you're trying to familiarize yourself with personnel. How did they jump out at you?
Well, one of the big things, and I think it's one of the things that sometimes gets a little bit overlooked and is sometimes, you know, underrated in terms of they both have really good ball skills. So a lot of times just to see the number of interceptions that they were, you know, able to accumulate and plays on the ball is something that I think is a big differentiation between a really good defensive back and someone who can really change the game for you. And so the ability to not just, you know, defend passes and get PBUs, but actually take the ball away, because that's really what ultimately can change the outcome of games. And so that jumped out, of course, you know, right away. But then just watching their competitiveness and a lot of times too, you know, you talk about short-term memory, but you know, every DB that plays in America is going to get beat, you know, and probably get beat multiple times, but how you can bounce back and respond. And especially as a corner, you know, one of the recruiting things that I've kind of learned and developed is, you know, with corners there, you know, you may play 70 plays a game and really only get three like points of contact plays, but those 3 points of contact plays may define and probably will define the outcomes of games. So you've got to be willing to play perfect, nonstop, in and out, every single play, you know, without maybe a lot of action and especially, you know, points on the ball action, you know, but be relentless in that and not get lazy and not get tired of just doing it the right way.
We're talking about Antonio Phillips and AJ Uzodinma, of course, the Cardinals' two starting corners. Why are their ball skills what they are?
I mean, I think, you know, one of the things I know for sure with AJ, and I'm sure Antonio did as well, but, you know, AJ was a quarterback and you know, in high school. And, you know, I think, you know, the ability to just track the ball. And, you know, a lot of kids don't play baseball as much. And you know, I'm not sure how much they probably even played. But the ability to just to track a deep ball is one of those skill sets. And, you know, a lot of times I used to, especially early on, like, hey, is he a baseball player? Which is a little bit harder to find now just in terms of, you know, it's become so
specialization.
Single-eyed sport deal. But, you know, the ability to just constantly perfect and work on, you know, your hands and how you see it, you know, seeing the different ways that, you know, the flight of the ball can take, you know, I think that's something that, you know, whether it's a natural thing that for them or whether it's just the comfortability that they've gotten because they've got good offensive background and, you know, especially with AJ, I mean, he's got a really good just natural ball skills that's pretty evident. I mean, that you can just do ball drills with him and see, like, you know, he could probably easily play receiver tomorrow if need be.
At safety, why is Bryce Cosby a good leader?
Ooh, there's so many things that I've come to learn and find about Bryce that are really, really special. You know, one, I think his ability and his voice to call people out and demand that there's a level and there's an expectation that needs to be met and hold people accountable to it. You know, is huge because when you take that position, you take that role, you now have to make sure that you're walking that same exact line or else it all just falls on deaf ears. You know, and he models that. And then just his knowledge and thirst to just be better and learn the game and understand the ins and outs, not just, okay, this is my assignment, this is what I got to do when this is called, but why are we doing this? Why, what's the, you know, what's the whole picture behind it and how it all fits? I think those are just huge elements. And then obviously he's got a great, you know, just skill set and ability and, you know, yeah, he's, you know, a little undersized, but I think he understands and he's not blind to that either and realizes that, okay, this is how I can set my game apart though, and differentiate myself from the rest. And, you know, he does a good, not even just a good, a great job of of doing that and pursuing that and working on that.
This is McAllister's Deli presents Monday Night with the Red and White. Josh Zeidenberg is our guest at the moment. Have you watched Miami film yet? Prepped?
I have not. I haven't watched a down of them at all. No, I have. I've watched.
I was like, when does game prep week start?
Yeah, no, I'm missing. We've kind of gotten into it and are continuing to kind of dive into it now as we're getting closer.
What concerns you about Brett Gabbert?
The funny thing is, not that he would know, but I actually had the St. Louis area when I was coaching at Western Illinois,
okay.
And a good chunk of Missouri, and so I actually was able to see him throw live one day, stopping by his high school, and he was already committed to Miami. I knew, but he was just there all in the gym, and an undersized, prototypical pro style quarterback. I don't know if undersized is the right word, but a shorter than what's a prototypical pro quarterback. He's got a really quick release. He for especially being young, he's got good command, and there's probably some of the lineage with his brothers being who they are. A high football IQ. You can tell that he's got a good feel and command of the offense, even just as a true freshman, it seemed like he did. And if you just watch his progression throughout the season and to where he was, at the start, even though he opened up with Iowa and had a really strong game, watching the bowl game and all of that, and the MAC championship, really. You could see just the growth and maturity that it came just from just one season. So I'm sure that's only increased as he goes into year two. And, he's mobile enough to run and do what he needs to do. But, has really good accuracy, quick release. He's gonna be someone that we got to make sure that we're on top of our game for.
You looking at your chops just to get out there?
Just play game and see some real 11-on-11 football. That'll be very, very exciting.
That'll be great. Josh Zeidenberg, thanks for stopping by, man.
Thanks for having me.
Ball State's defensive pass game coordinator, Josh Zeidenberg, joining us. Take a timeout. On the other side of this break, Brandon Martin will join us, Ball State linebacker. He was on campus last week, walking around in some pictures with two people. I showed up to the football facility last week. I knew there was some sort of video going on. Somebody told me, there's an NFL Network thing. Come check it out. And I'm like, well, what else do you know? Not much. I'm like, all right, well, I'll go. So I show up. I get to Schumann Stadium. Tyson Matthews, crack PR, sports information director, goes, hey, David Letterman and Peyton Manning over there. Sorry, what? So that was a weird kind of moment. Brandon Martin got to interact with both of those guys walking around campus. We'll talk to him about that moment and more next. This is Monday Night with the Red and White from McAllister's Deli from Learfield, IMG College.